My name is Glenn Condren. I'm program manager on the ASP.NET team, and I correctly added our Twitter handles since I had one of you come and ask us to.
Yes, thank you. and I'm Steve Lasker. I work on our Docker tools from Visual Studio, Visual Studio Code, all the way up to the Azure Container Service and some other stuff.
Yeah. Okay. So I think I'm going to switch to Steve's computer because he was frantically modifying the slides whilst he was standing up here and I was showing stupid pictures.
It's an on-the-fly. Mm-hmm. Everything's quick now. It's a quick DevOps.
On the fly? Thing. Okay, go. Tell me what we're talking about.
So today what we wanted to do is we want to take a little bit of a twist on the typical Docker scenarios. So we always talk about doing builds and running container images and deploying in that way. And you probably saw a lot of that stuff this week with Windows containers. But we wanted to try to cover some things that you might be able to do today. So today we think of the DevOps workflow where you're writing code. And you probably have a build system of some sort, maybe Visual Studio Team Systems or TFS. And then you build your code and you deploy it. So we wanted to talk a little bit about how you could build your containers as well. So why don't we kick off into, actually our next thing is demos. So we're not gonna have very many slides. That was part of it was actually deleting slides this morning.
In fact, so, I believe this is the only one.
We wrap up, yes, it's our, except our wrap up slide.
Okay.
So with that.
Right.
We're now in demos.
Using Docker. Okay. So, totally going to talk about works on my machine several times throughout the course of this talk. So let's level set, continue to level set for a little bit to make sure you guys understand what you're about to see. I have a .NET Core application. It happens to, and I have a server that I'm running that .NET Core application on. And I have a VSTS build set up such that when I commit source code, it automatically builds the application and it deploys it to the test server and I can go and browse to it. That's it. There is no Docker or containers or anything in this setup so far. It's probably how many of you do. Let's do some content adjusting questions to talk about how detailed I go into various pieces of this. How many of you identify yourself as developers? Whoa, fantastic. How many of you are like DevOps, IT pro, infrastructure, the guy that looks after the server? Okay.
I'm trying to clean up the mess after all those developers.
How many of you are both? Because a bunch of you put your hand up twice. Is there anybody who's like a DevOps-y infrastructure guy without being a developer? Or would not call yourself a developer? Just a couple. Awesome.
Okay.
How many of you, let's continue. And I'm going to ask a few more of those questions. Answer honestly, how many didn't put your hand up at all? That guy.
All right. It's always that guy.
Welcome to management, sir. Okay. Now, in this setup, so presumably a bunch of you have got setups like this, right? Just how you deploy your applications now. You've got to build, the build server builds, yeah? Most of you have got this happening, yeah? At least two people, well done. Okay. So, let's talk a little bit about how this works. I'm doing it all with just command line tasks here, just kind of keeping VSTS simple. I just do a .NET restore on my build agent, which downloads all the NuGet packages I need to build my .NET Core app. I publish. Publish does a compile, and it turns my source code representation of ASP.NET Core app into like the built assemblies and everything that I want to be able to push to my server or copy over to my server. I have this .NET test command. I have an earth-shattering one unit test in my project, and there's tests for that. I'm sure my application.
That's more than most of my apps.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then I copy it over S to the server. In this case, this is an SSH copy task because my server happens to be Linux, because I'm running ASP.NET Core, so I can. And then I tell the Linux server to reboot the app in this case, just to make sure it's running the app that I just pushed. That's it. And I can click here on this tab. I have this build turned on. I can click Q new build. It says I'm going to build my master branch. I'm going to use this VM agent. In this case, we have a custom build agent because we pre-prepared it for demos we're going to do later. But what I'm doing here could be done with just like a VSTS, just an agent that they give you.
The
right,
hosted agents.
Yeah. The hosted agents. That's the word I was looking for. Donovan will be most disappointed. Okay. And this run goes away and builds. It does its package restore, however fast it can manage to do its package restore, and then it runs its tests and it does its thing. Okay? And then eventually, I can come over here and I have this amazing complicated application, which is, you know, the single greatest ASP.NET application that's ever been built.
I think it's one of the most populars.
Quite likely. I would actually, a survey of how many ASP, like Azure App Services sites are just this would probably be an interesting number. Okay. So this is it. So right now it's doing the publish. Right now it's actually SSHing. It's copying files over the top. And then it's done. And I didn't make any changes to the site, so you don't know that it's done, except for it'll probably take a while. Look at that, bad gateway. So you know that it, you know that it's in the middle of rebooting the web app. So, not the most complicated and advanced setup, because it's just like my build server is telling my CI server to like reboot the website, probably somewhat suboptimal, but it demonstrates the point. And so, what we're gonna talk about today, the beginning of this talk, and probably the half of more or more of this talk, is how can I improve this setup? Or how can I use Docker in this setup? Even, or containers, I should be more careful to say, since the Windows container guy here is looking at me. how can I use that to kind of improve this setup? So the first half of this talk, we're not actually showing you how to run your apps in containers. We're just showing you how to use containers to improve a thing that you already do. And it's just purely inside your firewall in kind of your dev setup. Because there is a lot more containers have much more utility than the usual demo that you see of like, okay, I'm gonna build my app and deploy it to a cluster and now everything is amazing. Look how much I can scale this thing. Right? You can use it to optimize your own personal dev flow without actually ever talking to your manager about using it in production.
How many of you guys actually have containers deployed at this point?
Yeah.
A couple. Okay, there's a couple.
Cool.
That's cool.
How many of you have seen all of like Taylor and Co's talks about Windows containers this week? Or been to several Docker talks?
All right.
Cool. Okay.
Good deal.
And how many of you know anything about .NET Core, so I know how much of that I need to explain? Okay, a few some of you have watched some talks. Well done. Have you deployed any .NET Core or ASP.NET Core? Wow. You guys should come and tell me at the end everything that you've deployed on ASP.NET Core. I've been working on that for years, and I want to hear about it. Okay. So
speaking of
.NET Core,
didn't you guys just release an update?
Absolutely did just release an update.
So is your app updated?
Is my app updated to the thing? I am almost certain that it is not. And in fact, right here, I just realized I'm SSH'd into that build server that was just running, I'm pretty sure, which is cool. No, I wasn't. Okay. Now, if I cd into /, because I didn't prepare this earlier because I was too busy searching for silly pictures to display on the screen, that I have Ignite and I have this trad app thing. I'm gonna say git checkout master because I'm on this dry run branch from when we were doing testing this last night. Git status, I've got no clean. Okay, so now this is master, so it's exactly the same as what I just ran on the build server, right? Can all of you see this, by the way?
This is on your laptop you're running here.
Yeah, I should zoom. Okay, so this is master. It's the same as what I just ran on the build server you just saw when I clicked run. So I should be able to do like the .NET restore, the .NET test, the .NET run, exactly the same as what I just did on the build server, right? So we do .NET restore to get packages. I can go into my test folder, and I can run tests, right? And it'll to do my like amazing one unit test, which is fantastic. Cool. So I can run it, and I could do .NET run. And what Steve is trying to like poke at me about is that I made this big song and dance to him the other week about updating to this all of his stuff to 101, which we just shipped. It has a bunch of security updates and things like that for ASP.NET Core and .NET Core, and I haven't done it to this application. So I'm going to go and update my .NET Core app here to 101. I'm going to go update like MVC to 101. And then if I'm going to update the .NET I'm going to use, like the shared framework I'm going to use, then probably should update my test library as well, right? Now, I do have this installed on my machine, so I should now be able to do .NET restore again. And I should still be able to do .NET test, because this is all kind of an easy update. It was a pretty minor update, right, for those of you who are looking at .NET 1.0.1. It wasn't a very big deal. There wasn't very many bug fixes. So basically just small changes. So let's do .NET test now. Awesome. Okay, so I can still test. I can still run. I'm still running, even though I've changed to that one. I can go into my source. I can do .NET run. What? .NET rest?
You tired? You want a nap?
Well, I suppose. I'm not sure .NET rest has ever been anything remotely like a thing that you could type. So now I can go localhost 5000. And I can see that it's running over here. Look, it looks good, right?
Yeah.
Works.
Works on your machine.
It does. Look at that.
Now, can you check it in so I can
works
have some
on my
of
machine?
It does.
So.
I want to try.
No, you're not going to try. The build server has to pass, right?
Oh.
All right, so.
You can't just email me the files?
Email you the files? What century do you live in? Okay, git status, git add, what did I do with git add.a? Git commit, dash m, update to 1.0.1. Okay, git push. Now, what should happen here is over here in my builds, I should get a, I have this traditional build here. This is the one that we were just running, I believe. Yeah. And see how I've got another build in progress. Because as I committed to master, it just automatically kicked off the build deploy pipeline, which you're all so much familiar with. And I'm apparently waiting for output from console, console output from an agent, which seems like a fantastic thing to be waiting for. And now it's going to do .NET restore. It's going to build and publish my app. Everything should be good, right? Does everybody think it's going to be good? A couple of people. Well done for being brave and putting your hand up. Most people assume not, because typically whenever any speaker asks, do you think this is going to be good, the answer is no. Otherwise, they wouldn't have asked you. And what's going to happen here?
Did it work?
It's testing. No, it didn't work.
Your one test failed.
Yes.
You had one test to do.
Yes.
So you have 100% failure.
Yes, I have 100% failure. Thank you very much for pointing that out.
Success?
Okay, what's going on? So what I've done here is I could compile my application fine, even though it requires 1.0.1, because the .NET shared libraries like this with minor updates. But once I try to run my test, well, running an application, I've basically built a portable .NET Core application in order to run my tests. And I said the minimum version of the shared framework that your tests can run on is 1.0.1. But my build agent only has 1.0.0 on it. So my test binary can't be run on the build agent. How many of you have had to have gone through this dance where you need to update your dev machine, you update your dev bits, and then you need to go to the build server, but the build server breaks because you haven't installed X on it? And then you say, how many of you have done this dance? Everybody. And how many of you are the build server guys saying, I just installed something for you last week, go away, I don't really want to do this, my build server's got Visual Studio on it already, please stop doing this to me, for the love of God. And then eventually, you end up with a build with a person who owns the server who looks like a WWE wrestler and carries a cricket bat around. Well, that may have just been me. So I could now go and SSH it to the build agent and say apt update and like install .NET version 101, and my build would still work, and everything one would be happy until tomorrow or the next day. And so then I'm going to say, Steve, you're my DevOps guy. For some reason, you're wearing my hat backwards. Apparently, you think infrastructure is cool. Could you please install .NET 101 for me?
I'm busy, dude. I'm watching Elon here. He's talking about going to Mars.
He is literally watching Elon talking
it's
about
it's cool. Has anybody
Mars.
Seen this?
I'm assuming, I hope that all you guys that own the servers aren't always like that. But some of you probably are. And I make fun. Like, in all reality, the people who are trying to stop you from installing all sorts of stuff on your build agent have quite good an argument, right? They don't want to have lots and lots of stuff on there. And also, in general, this is a works on my machine problem, right? Like it works on the dev machine, and I'm going to commit, and it's going to break on the build server. For some of you, how many of you have like a separate guy who looks after the build, right? Yeah. So the other scenario in here that's quite unfortunate is you're the dev, you added to 101, works on your machine, you forget about the build agent. You do a push, build breaks, build guy comes to you and says, build's broken, and you go, works on my machine, right? And then, so now what you've actually done is you've introduced levels, various levels within your team of bit flipping, where the dev thinks that the build guy doesn't know what he's doing because he keeps coming back to you with problems and it works on your machine, and the infrastructure guy is angry, and like all sorts of problems happen.
So that is classic, the way it works today.
These are kind of classic problems that DevOps tries to solve, right? But we're going to talk about some ways to optimize this. And Steve is going to stop watching videos, and he's going
to... Really interrupting my morning.
Yeah. Since he's the Docker guy, because he works on the Docker tooling team and everything, he's going to hopefully show us a different way where we might want to try and solve this problem.
Let's see what we can do here. So a couple weeks ago, we, as we looked at this problem, we realized that we needed to provide a way for you to build your code in a container. And we spent some time talking about, you know, build environments and run environments.
Yeah.
And because .NET Core is a compiled language, it brings up some interesting things that we can do.
Yeah.
So a week or so ago, we released a new image called ASP.NET Core, or ASP.NET Core, because it's kind of hard to put a dot in there, dash build, in addition to the what we call the release image. So let's go take a look at what we can do here. So I'm going to say Docker run, Microsoft, ASP.NET Core dash build, and because Glenn was nice to update to the new version, I can go grab that image.
I did do my job and update all of our stuff, yes.
Very good, okay. So what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna run this in interactive mode, and I'm actually gonna do this other little trick that tells it when I'm done, just get rid of the container so it's not sitting in my list. So at this point, I now have a build environment, and if I look, we could see that there's a package cache on there already.
There's a folder called packages cache, for those of you who can perhaps not see.
Is that not big enough?
No.
I think we need a bigger screen. Okay, anyway.
Bigger screen?
DU, is it DU dash, was it? Which one did you like using?
Dash H.
Dash H.
For human.
For human, that's right. Okay, so if we look, we clearly have a lot of the packages already on this machine, so that's kind of cool. If we look at the Docker file, we'll also see that we've installed everything you need to build an ASP.NET image, because it turns out you need Bower, you need Gulp, you need NPM. What else did you jammy-whammy in here?
Everything we could think of.
Everything we need.
Yeah, so the ASP.NET Core build image is supposed to be capable of you doing like for .NET new web and then build inside the container, and everything would work. Yeah.
So now I want to use this to compile my code. So typically you might think of creating a Docker file and copying the contents in and building a Docker image. But in this case, I've got this environment already, and I'm not doing anything special. I don't have anything special in my build environment. I'm just compiling the code that he's got. So what I can do is use this nice little handy feature I call the wormhole, but it's really volume mapping. And what I'll do is, because I'm here in PowerShell, I'll do a pwd slash, and I'm going to mount this into what I call the SLN directory, because it's the solution. It's the root of my app.
So a bunch of you have already ran, have said you're running containers. So for many of you, and I also assume that lots of you have already watched or many of the Docker talks. So you're probably already familiar with this, but for the few of you that didn't put your hand up, when you're saying dash V, it means that you can, like, if you go into that directory, that SLN directory, and you make a file, that'll actually appear on your laptop, as opposed to the normally when you're inside a container, files only inside the container, right? Yeah. Okay.
Enough.
Seemed excessive, but sure.
Okay. Right. Well, you wanted it bigger.
Yeah, sure. Okay. It's not what I had, quite what I had in mind, but that's fine. So by doing volume mounting, we're saying take this source code that's on my local machine, make it accessible inside the container when I'm running in this cleaner environment, and if you write any files back into that source directory, make sure they stay on the host so that I can use them later.
So I just deleted those and they're gone. So I'm just, it's really basically just a network share if you think about it. Now you do, where you are using Docker for Windows here, and you do need to make sure you're volume mounting. So you go here, share drives, turn this on. So that's definitely a prerequisite to getting this set up. And if you're on AD credentials when you come off of your domain. You may notice that if you restart, you have a little bit of a problem. Docker's doing a lot of work. We've been working a lot of, closely with them, and they're doing some work to improve this.
I believe their latest beta that Steve was too scared to install yesterday, in case
it was last night.
Demos. I believe that has much more work in detecting these sorts of shared volume problems.
It should tell you when you've requested a volume that's not there. It'll tell you there's an error to go get it.
Okay.
All right, so we got that. So now I'm in the container, and now I can do .NET restore.
Okay.
And it's going to go look at my two projects, not the entire contents of my machine, and restore all of the project.json projects down below. And I've got two. Now, that went pretty fast here.
Yeah, so what we did in the ASP.NET Core build image, we actually pre-restored a whole bunch of NuGet packages. So as part of building the image, we have this big project JSON that has all the packages that Microsoft ships and ASP.NET and their dependencies. And we actually do .NET restore on it as part of building the thing.
So in your user profile. So installing means what?
So it means that when you run .NET restore inside this image, all of these things that are saying installing, they're not downloading anything off the internet. They're already on the machine. All it's doing is like writing them into your log file and doing bookkeeping. There's a couple on here that restoring. There's a couple on here that say restoring. They're basically tools packages.
Is that you?
It's not me.
We should get him to come up.
But I do know that in those situations, the button to stop the noise is always impossible to find. So that's why your restore is so much faster, because the NuGet packages are already there. And you'll also find that inside this container and inside the other ASP.NET Core container, your ASP.NET applications at least, and probably even just generally your .NET Core applications, I should say, in ASP.NET Core, will start faster, because that packages cache folder that Steve talked about earlier has pre-compiled binaries for all of the
now
framework
you're ahead. Now
packages.
Now you're just being too cool.
Yeah, so we found out that JIT time can be expensive, especially for our code, the big ASP.NET framework code. So we put pre-jitted some stuff for you. And we'll show you a little bit of that later. I'll talk about it a little bit.
So what I was able to do is I just ran .NET test here inside of my container. And because I have the 101 environment, it worked fine. So that's really cool.
So and now it works on my machine and on a VM on your machine.
Well, it's not a VM. Right? It's a container.
It's in a container in a VM on your machine.
Don't get distracted. Okay. All right, so I'm running it in a container. And then lastly, I can do the .NET publish. And there, I'm going to make sure I publish my root app. And I'll do the release configuration.
Okay.
And I'm going to put it in the root here, / publish.
OK.
So now we've good?
Yeah. Yeah, we've done. So now you've done exactly what we're doing on the build server and what we were doing on my machine earlier, right? You're just generating.
Right.
You've successfully built your ASP.NET Core application inside a container.
And if we look, because it's volume mount, you'll notice this publish folder just showed up.
Yeah.
So it's now I can get rid of the container, right? We can just get rid of it here, and it's still there, right? So I was able to maintain that on the host because containers are immutable.
So you've managed to successfully, you've downloaded a few extra packages. Well, so you managed to do a .NET restore and do a .NET build, and the only artifacts that were left over at the end were the output of the build. None of the NuGet packages that you needed or any of that stuff actually hit your
just
host.
Just the root contents that I need, right, exactly.
Yeah, that's kind of nice.
So now we just need that DevOps guy to just type that script every time. Is that a problem?
Well, he probably needs to install Docker on the build agent, too.
Well, okay. So we do need to go bother the guy one more time.
Yeah.
But this time, we're going to ask him to put Docker on the build agent. And now what we'll do is let's generate a script that runs those commands. And then we could have that execute in the container every time.
Yeah, nobody types on the build agent. So how do I automate what you just did?
All right. I like typing.
Yeah, but no, Steve.
All right, so what we're going to do is create a build file on here. Right. And we'll do the
you should also say that, like, we're showing you the intent of us, with the intent of this whole talk was to show you a bunch of ways that things can happen, but the intent is mostly to leave you thinking about this type of stuff. We're not necessarily saying that in any way, shape, or form that you should go and create a bunch of build scripts, bash scripts to automate your build. We're just showing you like concepts for the most part, and this is a nice, easy, convenient way to show that. But it's also not necessarily wrong if you really want to do this. And we will evolve this as we go, so you'll see different ways of achieving the same goal. RimRef? Why are we RimRefing?
Well, because I want to make sure that when I run this every time, I don't want to publish previously and then leave some files, then publish again and have some of those files available.
Because your build edge may not be ephemeral in this case, because of the way we're doing it.
Exactly. Okay, cool. Because we're going to test this on my machine, and then we'll run this on our server.
Okay.
So all I'm doing is the exact same commands that we typed. I will clear out that directory and then publish again.
Yep.
And then we just do this little jammy here that if any of these fail, it'll error out.
Yeah, this command, this line says if any one line fails, exit the entire script with an error instead of like continuing, basically. If this is on error, exit instead of on error, resume next, I guess.
So now the one problem that might bite you if, and I'm curious if this rings a bell to you, this, because I'm creating this file on Windows, Windows does CRLF for line endings. We need it to be just be LF, otherwise I'll get just completely useless errors inside of the
Linux. Imagine the intersection of people using Visual Studio and running files that you edit in Visual Studio directly on Linux is probably not very big yet.
Not yet. Who's using Windows and generating Linux content, like bash files or running .NET Core on
One
Linux?
One guy.
One guy? All right, couple.
A couple.
They were embarrassed because they don't want to insult Patrick over there.
Linux is great. He was one of the guys that put his hands up. He's on the Windows container team.
Okay, so now we've got that bash script that we've done. We fixed the line endings problem. So now what I can do is I can run this command again, and I can say run the shell and run build.sh.
Oh, yeah.
And I get the can open problem. So the next problem here is,
I know what it is now. Okay, go.
So is that's expected to run inside that volume mount that I've got. So I got to say set my working directory to /SLN.
So that's like completely wrong what you just typed.
It is.
No way, any doesn't resemble any type of
command line. Oh, sorry. Argument. Yeah, I just mixed completely two different,
It's either dash W or dash dash
Y. I was making it doubly
neither
good. I was showing them both syntaxes in one. And all the things that you shouldn't do when on stage, and it still can't open. What did I do? Dash working directory SLN.
Did you name the file wrong? Good job.
Did I do it over here? No, build. Oh, did I hear?
It's called bool.
Yeah.
There's no
I was so careful not to name it bash.sh.
Why would you name it bash.sh?
Because I'm writing a... don't even ask.
Okay.
It makes it really problematic when you're trying to show errors and you get another error.
You know what is amazing, though? He's been watching you made that error from like 3 minutes ago.
I'm waiting.
This moment.
So we'll see here. Our published directory, depending on how fast it refreshes, refreshed faster than I could see it. But now our published content is now built. So I've just automated that whole command.
I see too fast. I don't really trust it.
You want me to do it again?
I want you to delete publish and do it again.
You're not a very trusting person.
I just saw you.
Are you a security guy?
I just saw you not be able to type build.
This is why we have Visual Studio, so I can pointy clicky stuff. Uh-huh. It's so much easier. Uh-huh.
Okay, so now I'm noticing that it's doing stuff. I can see it is doing package stuff. Okay, cool. And so every time we rerun this, we get the exact same build.
Poof.
So that's the intent?
Yeah.
Seems cool.
All right.
But
so
I still can't do it on my build server, so it still only works on your machine and my machine.
Well, you can, I got to check it in. Oh, that detail, yeah. All right. So now we'll share our code here.
Okay. So Steve's going to publish this. He's going to go do a git commit, and I'm switching over to my machine. Still works on my machine, by the way. I'm saying that's always been the case. Now we're going to touch back, and we're going to bring all of Steve's like Docker demo-y stuff back to our original problem, which is my failing test. I'm going to update my build to basically do exactly what he just typed at the command line, and then we'll rerun, and we'll see if that solves our problem. Theoretically, this solves our problem. I hope some of you just said, hands up, this is a difficult one, and I probably shouldn't do this, but who does understand how we've already solved the problem or not? Nobody? Couple of people. Awesome. Okay, I'll make sure I demonstrate it really clearly, hopefully. So what I'm going to do here in my build, I'm going to delete all the restore build test stuff. I'm going to go in here, and I'm going to add a new thing, and down here somewhere is a Docker whale. Can any of you see the Docker whale? I don't think I can type in here. I'm going to have to talk to Donovan and find out why I can't.
Go to utility.
Utility?
Actually,
Docker's not in utility. Docker should be in build.
I can't remember what category you put it in.
It's alphabetical, right? For the love of God. Why do I have no Docker anymore?
You're on all?
I thought so. Right? Like, I just clicked
task
this.
Catalog.
And then I clicked all. Where is it? Someone just said, there it is. There it is! Look! That wasn't there a second ago. Come on. Okay, I'm going to click add. Donovan's like somewhere right now. Donovan is watching and just laughing. He's like modifying my stuff on the fly. I know it.
He's messing with him.
Okay. Now I'm going to select my build agent here because my build agent, I've already installed. So we didn't show you like how to install Docker on that agent that was running my build earlier. I've already got Docker installed. Okay. So I'm selecting that build agent and saying, you're going to be my Docker. You need a Docker registry here right now. We'll talk about that later. For now, it's something we don't actually use it in anything that I'm doing right now. And then we're going to run a Docker command. Bless you.
You want that command?
Yeah. Show me what your command was.
All right. So Docker run.
Docker run. And you said we're going to say dash V. And what we actually want to map here is like dollar. I'm going to do this so that you guys know how to find this. Nope, not that one. VSTS build variables. And I need something here. So the thing about volume mapping is the left-hand side needs to be an absolute path. So what I need to find here is one of the like VSTS things that tells me where all my source code's at. So in here somewhere, you have a local path, and there's a build repository local path. That looks like a good one, right?
And they basically showed in two formats. There's the object path and the environment variable.
Yeah, so we're going to do this. So this should get me into the root of my of where all my source code is cloned. And then I should be able to say
SLN for the root of our solution.
Tradap, right? That's where that is?
No, it's SLN.
No, that's where I'm mapping
it. Oh, sorry, local path, yes.
Right, and then that's my volume mapping. So that's saying the location where the source code gets cloned to on my build agent, take that folder, let it be inside the container, inside a folder called SLN at the root of my container. That's right?
Yeah.
That all?
Yep.
And then I need that dash W thing, and it needs to be SLN, right?
Correct. You got to set your working directory.
And then I say Microsoft/ASP.NET
core
dash build, build.
Because we're doing the build environment, 101.
Yep, 1.0.1.
Right.
And then you want me to do what, shbuild.sh?
Shbuild.sh. Do we spell it correctly?
I hope you did. Okay, cool.
Works on my machine.
Okay, save. All right. So now my build is running this Docker command. I wonder what happens. It's presumably not going to work because nothing ever works on the first try, as we have so aptly demonstrated in this thing that we've done 100,000 times in the last few days. Okay, so what you can see here is it's actually doing package restore now. So it's actually already spun up my container on of my build agent, and it's now doing package restore inside a container. And it's taking a little bit to download stuff, but that's okay. Because there is a couple of things it needs to download. It's doing a lot of I/O on the build agent as well as it works out all the packages are there. Now it's restoring my test project. And then it's like flickering. Apparently it worked so hard it destroyed the HDMI. Okay. So it appears to be working.
So your test ran. You got...
And I have tests.
There it is, tests.
I have tests on the build server.
So you flipped the bit and went 100% successful.
Yeah. My one unit
Your
test.
Your one unit test, yes. As long as the test passed, does it matter how many?
Yes.
Okay.
So now I'm copying the bits over. So I didn't change how I'm deploying my application at all. All I changed was how I'm building my application. And now I've successfully fixed my build server. So what I've done is said, instead of installing .NET 1.0.1 on my server, I'm going to get Docker on there, and then I'm going to make sure that all of my builds happen inside a container. And I just kind of played around with some scripts to make that happen for this for now. And the key kind of thing here is that if I run that Docker command on my machine, not only will it work on my machine, I know it will also work on the build server, because the exact same thing is running on the build server.
And because that same environment, right?
Yeah, the same environment. Because when I do the build on my machine inside the ASP.NET Core build container, it's the same ASP.NET Core build container on the server, the build agent. So it's always the same. You're not going to have, I'm missing the right version of the .NET framework, and you're not going to have, I'm missing this library that has to be installed on the machine to
Gulp
compile
or
my
Bash
app.
Or
all
Bower,
those sorts of things, right?
Bower,
none of those things should be an issue. And as we'll talk about in a little bit, you can improve this process if you have a new dependency that is not part of ASP.NET Core build that your application needs, then you could build your own Docker image to be a base. So instead of typing, instead of running build inside of ASP.NET Core build, that could be run build inside of my company slash my build base. And then you could put whatever you want in there, and then you always control absolutely the environment. And if that thing is checked into the source control of your actual code base, the people who actually know what needs to be installed on the server, which is all of you developers out in the audience, can actually add to that Docker base, to that base image, and then deploy. So instead of you saying, I installed 20 things in the last week, I think it's this one that makes it work, you can work that out yourself. And then when you commit, it's going to build, and it's going to work, not just on your machine or his machine. However,
but wait.
Right now,
there's more.
If I was to run this on my machine, I would have to go like copy and paste this thing, right? Because that seems kind of suboptimal.
Right? Oh, you don't like typing?
Can't you make my life better?
I can. We can try.
Okay.
So I can't finish watching this.
No, stop watching it.
But it's cool.
You've been talking to me about it for 3 days.
All right. So what I want to do is encapsulate all those commands. And what Docker's done is they also have a file format called the Docker Compose. Mm. And what Compose does by design in its beginning is it spins up multiple containers in a collection and associates them between each other. So it's like the composing a group of things together. They have great names. You got to give them credit for that.
Docker Compose?
Yeah. But as part of Compose, it will also specify the parameters by which it could spin up, because containers are immutable. They don't really know what environment they're in. That's by design. So you need to configure it for each environment. So we're going to use this Docker Compose file, even for one container, to specify the things that we had in that command line.
Right. What you're saying here is that so the Docker Compose file is like a declarative way of doing the like imperative type like running of scripts that I'm doing right now. And it's kind of nice, and it's checked in, and it's easier to manage and maintain. Is that what you're trying to get
at? Exactly.
Okay.
So now I can specify all that information. Mm-hmm. Microsoft.
That's not how you spell Microsoft.
I knew I was spelling it wrong. / ASP.NET Core build 1.0.1.
How long have you worked at Microsoft for?
Not long enough to be able to spell, but it has nothing to do with work where I'm working. All right, so images, volumes.
I'm waiting for me to make a spelling mistake later, and he's going to come back at me with a vengeance.
Oh, yeah. All right, so I'm taking the current volume, current directory, uh-huh. and we're going to put it in SLN. I caught that one. No, you didn't see that.
Uh-huh.
a working dir
yep.
/ SLN, and I got to go the other way.
You also didn't spell SLN directory.
Damn it.
There.
Dyslexic.
I didn't see that one.
entry point.
How many of you have spell checkers installed in Visual Studio? Yeah. You can get a plugin that gives you a spell checker in Visual Studio for those of you who didn't know. I think it's a plugin. I don't think it's built in.
And what am I doing? Build. I'm consistent.
Yeah, I'll give you that.
Okay. So now I've specified everything that we had in that command line right here in this compose file. And we'll take a quick look to see if I messed up anything. I think that's everything.
All right. So can you run this?
Now,
Docker run something?
Docker compose. It's another base CLI. And because I've taken it off the default naming convention. I have to pass that in. And then I just say up. And I messed up. Because unsupported configuration for working dir. Working.
It's work dir on the command line, right? It's work dir?
Working dir. I think that's the one.
Oh, they put an underscore.
Yeah, let me just do this.
In Docker Compose land.
There we go.
Nice.
So now, with a much simpler command, so I don't have to sit there and be on the phone with Glenn because he won't listen to email. I can put it on Slack. You can listen there. And remember that full-length command, we can just say Docker Compose up. And now everything I need is encapsulated in that. So it's really nice. If I'll check that in here while you're going off and do that. Changes.
So this makes it easier to do to get past that works on my machine problem that we had earlier. Because this codifies what you're going to run. So you could also, instead of having entry point sh build.sh, it is possible in here. Like this entry point is taking that entry point command in here. All this other stuff is the same as what we were saying at the command line. Mm-hmm. But we didn't explicitly say entry point before.
Oh, true.
So this entry point is the thing that's going to run when this runs. So this is kind of defining what my container is going to look like. And in this case, you're saying, I'm going to have a container. It's going to be coming from the ASP.NET core build. I want you to mount the solution directory, go CD into that, which is what working dir effectively is doing. And then when I do up, and so I run you, I want you to run sh and build.sh. For those of you who are wondering why the hell we keep running sh and build.sh, you need to, because it's not chmodded, because this was created from a Windows machine, you can't just say build.sh. You need to like make it executable and stuff, as far as I'm aware. Feel free to correct me on Twitter if I'm wrong.
But the other thing is, so take a look at entry point and run, because there's some interesting, and command. Mm-hmm. There's some interesting behaviors between all of those, so without drilling in too much.
Yeah, there's command and entry point, so if you have defined an entry point and then you have commands, the command couldn't be passed into the entry point and things like that. So you could also, though, specify your restore, run, publish here in this file if you wanted to. You don't have to split it off into a bash
script.
Oh,
the three commands, yeah.
You could just put them all in here and just have this one file, and this one file would encapsulate how your entire build worked. If you were on Windows containers, theoretically, in here could, and like a full .NET application, I assume in here we could do something like MS build blah, assuming you've got MS build inside your container. Looking at the container guy in case he's going like this.
Well, to be fair,
because I think it will work, but it should,
.NET
it
Core,
be fine.
We have some completion to do on MS build.
Absolutely, but that's why I said full .NET.
Oh, I missed that part.
So yeah, so if you're on Windows Server Core, you're running a full .NET application inside a Windows container, you've got like your web forms app, your MVC application, you could do all of this stuff with that as well using Windows containers.
Right.
We're showing you Linux and .NET Core because I work on ASP.NET Core.
Yeah, we're really, the thing we're really trying to show here is what you can do with containers. All of this would equally apply to Windows containers as well.
Yeah.
We're hot off the press, so we'll add content related to those as we go along.
Right.
All right, so we've got the compose file.
And you
so
just
you could
pushed
actually,
it, right?
I pushed it. So you could actually reconfigure your build
My
agent
build,
to use
really?
That. And what's nice about this last change here is that Glenn will be able to change that to just use compose up. And then even if it's the same person wearing two different hats, that he doesn't have to go, or he or she doesn't have to go and go to the build agent to change something. If it's something just got encapsulated as a parameter, I can just go to the compose file, change it. I could add environment variables. I could add other tasks. I could add other volumes. There's a bunch of stuff that you could declaratively do in there. So between the script and the compose file, I'm able to encapsulate everything in my repo. So when I check it in, the build server is actually becoming more of a cattle into pets and cattle.
Never mind. It's fine. Keep going.
All right.
I'm not distracting the audience at all.
Just dancing over here.
My Docker wasn't there again the first time. And then I tried to open it a second time, and it didn't load anything. And then I tried a third time, and then it finally worked.
Okay. Keep you on your toes.
Yeah.
This is another form of coffee. Just get the adrenaline going.
Uh-huh.
So that's just some of the nice things. So we're talking about how we were able to encapsulate the environment with Docker containers, but we're also able to encapsulate our build environment as well when we're passing into our build agents.
Yep.
So your compose command, you just got to pass it the file.
Yeah, but I need to, do I need an absolute path? An absolute path? I probably do, right? I can absolutify it anyway, right?
Yeah. Yeah, you do need to get absolute path to the compose
file. And then it's in the root, right? So I'm just
yep,
in
it's the root
here,
of the project.
Docker. How did you capitalize this
the
one?
The same way I do it all the time. docker-compose-build.yaml.
Okay, and then up?
Up.
Is that it?
That's it. That's all you should have to do.
Really? Okay.
Worked on my machine.
Yeah, that's not going to haunt me. Okay, we'll delete Docker. Delete this one then, right? I'm going to delete it.
Yep. No, don't delete that one.
Okay, I deleted the other one already. Okay, then save.
Don't you ever put comments in your code?
In my code?
When you deploy? How do I know what you did there?
When I'm saving it, editing it like this?
Just teasing.
There we go. Saved. My internet is clearly slow here for me. My apologies. Okay, so I'm just going to queue it then, and I'm going to trust that Steve told me to type the right thing. Does anybody believe
that's
this
your
one?
Second mistake.
Does anybody believe this one will work on the first go? Okay. Oh, one guy. Thank you, sir, for your faith.
Is he the manager?
No, he wasn't the manager. That was that guy.
Instilling confidence in his team.
The manager guy's proud. I don't know what you're talking about. He's like, hell yeah, I'm a manager.
Somebody's got to keep the upper management off
our
backs so we can get stuff
done. How do you think
Steph
gets done around here? It wouldn't if it was just you guys chuckleheads running around. Okay. I don't think my man. All right. So now I am doing a restore. And you'll notice that all of my console output here has changed because this is Docker Compose output. As it kind of names the, because Docker Compose is kind of designed originally to have many containers running to like compose together many containers. It gives you names and it's telling me that the number one trad app compile container that you defined is doing all this stuff. Because maybe you could create compose such that there were a couple of those things and you would have several services. The classic kind of use case for Docker Compose is I'm going to create a web app and like a backend API and maybe a database. I'm going to define them all in that one Docker Compose file. And when I say Docker Compose up, my web app starts and my backend server starts and my database starts and they all start in the right order. Right? So that's kind of what Docker Compose is optimized for. What we're using it for in this case is just to, oh ye of little faith. Look at that. It worked first time.
Yay!
And
it's green. We like green. Green is good.
So I noticed, so that's kind of what it's optimized for. We're using it as a declarative way just to define a single container to run our builds in, and that's fine.
All right. So we've now fixed the whole build problem.
So now if I run Docker Compose up on my machine, and it finishes, and it runs .NET test, then we are guaranteed that since all we're doing is Docker Compose up on the server as well, exactly the same, it's always going to be the same.
Right, because we've captured everything. We don't have to worry about passing parameters to it, other than the file, right? So we know which file we're going to run.
Right. So I could uninstall .NET from my build agent, right?
You could.
And I could uninstall, I could remove like anything on my build agent except like Git and Docker.
It becomes a cow, not a dog.
A cow, not a pet.
Yeah.
Right. I hope you explained that metaphor properly when I wasn't.
Do you guys, so people are familiar with the cattle and pet model? It's an interesting thought process that basically says, you know, your pets, you're named, you care for them, they're not very disposable,
you love them,
right?
You tuck them in at night.
You get upset
them names,
when they're
sick. And some of you have servers like that, right? It's got a name, you know where it is, it's like over there, you look after it all the time, you make sure all the right things are installed, you like, you know, pat it lovingly every time you walk past the rack, something like that. That's kind of I've worked with people like that before. Yeah. Okay, so
They got plants and servers in his room. And then the idea of cattle is I just provision a VM, or in this case, a container, and when I'm done using it, just flick it away, don't care.
So in this case, you give it a number, and you don't really care where it is. You don't care what's you know that they're all the same. They're interchangeable. It's just ideally what you want with computers is that they should be interchangeable for many tasks, especially things like build agents, right? You want a pool of 5 build agents. You want every one of them to be identical, and you want them all to be capable of building every project in your organization. You don't want to have build agent F that can only build this one project because that one project requires something different to all the other projects that I've had, right? And this helps you avoid that, because as long as you can express the differences that each project needs inside a Docker file or a Docker Compose file, then it can be the job of the team who make that project that know what's required to make sure that the environment is correct. And you can express a lot in a Docker file or a Docker Compose file, effectively anything that you need on the environment. You can run installers and do whatever you to get stuff onto the machine, do whatever you want. Okay?
So now that our ops guy has been, or our build guy has been talking to our ops guy, and they've heard more about containers, and we're now using those in our build environment, and the build guy, the guy's responsible for the build agents, they can go off and watch Elon or whatever other videos that are out on the internet. What's the sneaky cat or something that you watch all the time?
I don't know what you're talking about.
So the ops guys think, well, maybe I will deploy containers in production. Because I can start dealing with developer that keeps on asking me to add more things to my production environment.
So what you're saying here is we just solved that whole problem for the build agent, but the same problem exists for your server that you're going to run the app on, right? Like, we just successfully built and pushed, but we've taken the binaries out of the container, we pushed them to the server, but if 101 wasn't on the server, the test failure at our build agent are probably the least of our problems, because the server's now not working, because it can't run the application, because it's missing 101 on the server, right? So whilst you've cleaned up and encapsulated and made your build super nice, because you're still doing this kind of traditional, like taking binaries and I'm just deploying them over to the server, traditional, this is what everybody does right now.
We didn't call it legacy.
Because you're just doing things that way, you haven't kind of fully gotten the advantage of containerizing everything. And so you're saying, if you then also use containers to run your application, I can solve these problems that we're talking about for the entire end-to-end. And I'm kind of shifting the responsibility a little bit, right? Because it means that this is a general theme of this shifting the responsibility, and it meshes very well with the sort of stuff Donovan's always talking about. Mm-hmm. Where you're saying that the team who is responsible for building the application and designing what it is going to own what the environment is like. Right?
So that means that the dev can't blame the ops guy when it doesn't work in production?
Yeah, well, that's right, yeah.
I don't know if I like that.
You don't know if you like that?
No, I don't want more responsibility. All right, so what we'll do now...
I would rather say that the ops and dev teams should the one team, like there is no two teams
that's
anymore.
True. That would be the next one.
Okay, go.
All right, so what we've seen, though, actually, is a model we've seen a number of customers do is one of the ways they can start adopting Docker is do it in the development environment, do it in their build environment, and then when they've built confidence, start rolling it out into their production environments. Mm-hmm. So now what we're going to show is now that we've got the content that we need to compiled in a container consistently, we want to take that content and put it in a container. Right. So what I've got here is a Docker file I've added to my project, and now I'm going to do the ASP.NET core.
Spelled it wrong.
Did I really?
No, it's just got a lowercase d.
No, that's the right way.
Okay.
Wait, no, it is capital D. Damn it. Yeah. All right. Docker has its standard in, anyway.
The whole reason I'm here is just to pull him up on spelling mistakes and capitalization.
It doesn't matter on Windows.
That's true.
All right, so
here. As you can see, because it's not changing. Okay, go. Keep going. I don't want to keep distracting you.
Here, what I've done is I said from ASP.NET Core. And I didn't say build, because I don't want the build environment inside of my runtime container. I want it as small and fast as possible. So I've got just the core runtime. I'll set the working directory to /app. And I'll copy from the directory that this thing's running in, where the Docker build runs from, copy it into the contents of the container in the working directory. I'm going to say expose 80.
You might want to give copy a folder path, right?
I don't need to.
OK. Oh, because you did die. I've worked a, you ahead of me that time.
Yeah. And now, and you'll also notice we're getting some IntelliSense here on Docker files. And we'll talk about a Docker tools for Visual Studio extension that we shipped that makes this easier.
I don't know if I like this copy dot dot. That seems like it's way too easy to. That's cool, but okay. So now you have to find the entry point. Okay, who's familiar? A lot of you just said you weren't necessarily familiar with ASP.NET Core, and that shouldn't be a prerequisite, given that that just happens to be our payload here. When you compile a portable ASP.NET Core application, the output is a DLL, and you can run that DLL on Mac or Windows or Linux. Doesn't matter what you're building it on, and you run it via saying .NET. Run this DLL, and then you install the .NET thing on each platform, basically. Okay, so he's saying, this is all he's saying is, so in this case, there's no compiling or building in here, which means that when he says copy into the container, he has to be copying the already compiled app, right? That's what your intent
right.
is? Okay.
So the next thing is, I want to copy it from the published output directory. So the next thing I want to do is tell VS, or tell .NET rather, .NET Core, that when it runs publish, to copy that Docker file with it, because it's in the project.
Okay. So now when you do
publish. My case sensitivity coach over here.
So now when you do publish, the Dockerfile will end up in the output. Like
right.
It'll be an output. Right.
So now what I can do is, I think I have that command here. I'm just going to run Docker Compose across my project, and it will run my build script again. And because when I'm running publish, it will actually put that file there as well.
And so you've noticed something here that you may have noticed. We just, every time we do this build inside a container, it keeps doing this NuGet restore thing every time. And you actually see it doing restores every time, because every time we run, we're clean, right? The NuGet packages are being downloaded into the container.
Not downloaded.
Some of them are.
Well, okay, fair. That's so, only because we didn't go back and add those.
So,
we're going to make that faster.
So when you're doing build, it's a clean environment. Any NuGet packages you add that aren't in that base image, ASP.NET Core build base image, they're going to get downloaded every time because it's a clean build, and they get and the contents of the file system, except for what you explicitly put into that volume mount, go away once the build's done, which is actually kind of nice for many things. You actually typically want that. I'm assuming that many of you do make some attempts to make sure that your build is a clean build every time you you run. And this you kind of get for free in this model.
So now that we have put that Dockerfile in the published folder, I can now tell it, and because I happen to be in the solution root here, Docker build the path to where the default Docker file is, and because I'm using the default name, it'll work, and we'll say optimized. So what I'm doing is I want to do an actual Docker build. So now we're getting to the more traditional way people think about Docker, is build this Docker file in that context, so it's .publishweb, and name it, tag it, trad app optimized.
Okay.
And
so now you've built another Docker image, right?
I have. And I could have done this, so what you might have seen is cd, what is my source, no, sorry, publish web. So if I did this command without this, if I just said dot, that would be the same thing because I'm in the directory. And it's something called the context. The context is the folder, the root, that is going to get copied up to the host, and then the copy commands run on that collection of files. So those are the same thing. So now, if I look at my Docker images, we'll now see an image called trad app optimized, mm-hmm. and that's the one we just built. And now I could say Docker run. We'll do an interactive just to see what's going on. Dash P. Actually, I'm going to do a dynamic thing here.
Okay.
And trad.
Dynamic sounds great.
Dynamic. We love dynamic. So what I'm doing here is, all right, that's what I get for.
New tab.
No, I wanted to show that. No, actually, I can do this. Let me do dash D.
Okay, if you like.
So what I wanted to show was the dynamic port. So one of the reasons that we do port 5000 is to avoid conflicts with if you have IIS on your machine.
When he says 5000 by default, if you don't do anything else and you run an ASP.NET Core application, it's listening on 5000 on your local machine. And so we do that because typically AD is not available on a local on your machine, IIS. Something has taken that up. Even Skype occasionally, I believe in the past, has taken port 80 on my machine. And he's saying, then so what Steve's demonstrating here is that doesn't matter so much in containers.
Right, because the container can listen on its port because it's isolated, but I have to make it exposed outside of the container on the host. So it's doing a little NAT, address translation.
So inside the ASP.NET Core image that he's built this from, we actually set an environment variable that tells ASP.NET Core to listen on port 80 publicly. But that only actually takes effect, but that doesn't make it automatically available on the host. So that's why the dynamic port mapping is happening.
Right.
Probably about as deep as we want to go on that.
Yeah,
kind of the main point of the.
So here we can see what the port is, and now I navigate to it, and now we have our app running in a container locally.
On your machine.
We have yet another copy of this app.
Yet another copy running, because it is the most useful app in the world.
Yes. All right. So now, for those of you that have done Docker before, you might be wondering, wow, that seems kind of complex, that if I do, I'm doing Docker twice, one for build and one for run.
Is anybody thinking that?
Yes, okay.
One guy.
So let's show why.
Couple guys.
It's one guy. He's representative of a larger group.
Okay.
So we're going to add another item, not existing. Add a new item. Doesn't matter. And we'll do Docker file single to show what it looks like in a single case. And just for the sake of time, we'll copy this in here. So now what we're going to do is what people might think of as the more traditional way to do Docker. So in this case, I'm just going to say from.NET.
That could be ASP.NET core build, right?
It could.
In fact, it should be, but that's fine.
It should be, but it would be even bigger, so I'm trying to show a point.
Okay.
You want to do that one?
No, it's good. It's fine. I don't want to disrupt your demo now.
So I'll set the working directory. I'm going to tell Kestrel what port to listen to, which if I use the other image, it wouldn't, but I want to try to show the primitives here. We'll still expose 80, we'll copy our source in, we'll do a .NET restore, and then we'll do a .NET run.
Okay.
So now, if I come over here, and let me get back up, and actually, we're going to go navigate into our directory, source, trad, app.
So that previous thing that he did, where he copied the output into the Docker image and then ran it, it actually meshes very nicely with what we just saw with the build, right? You could have your build server be just run that Docker Compose up exactly as we've got it now. The very next step could just be Docker build on the output of that build, that first one. And now I've got an image instead of just having a traditional app. Right? So the two techniques that we've kind of shown go together very well to generate an image that only has binaries in it.
So now I'm going to do that Docker file where it's going to restore in the container. And it's exactly what you're seeing here. So I've got the single file. So let that finish in. I didn't bother with test in this case because I guess I could run your unit test. But anyway, and now if I look at these, if I do a Docker run.
You might want to spell Docker correctly.
So detailed. Docker run dash IT. So we'll make it interactive. Dash P. And I'm actually going to do map it to port 80. We'll do 8080. Trad app. Single. And so it does start up. It's saying it has to be compiled because that is the benefit of one of the benefits of ASP.NET.
When you do .NET run, it's a shortcut for compile my app and then start it up. So he's put .NET run in as his entry point. So every time he starts his container, it's going to try and compile it, which is probably not very good, but that's okay.
Stop taking away my thunder.
Okay.
So it seems like it worked pretty good, right? Because I now have that other one running. And we can see the requests happening here. So it is running.
Yep.
So that's kind of nice. We'll quit out of this. But let's start taking a look at what actually was going on here.
Right.
My single one is larger. And that's because in order to compile the app, whether I did .NET run or I did .NET publish, it needs those dependencies. It needs that build environment. So the image itself had to be bigger to do that. And because I didn't actually do the publish, and we just did .NET run, it dynamically did compilation, it's going to be, let's take a look at this. So I have a Docker start timer. And if I pass, we'll say dash D to a detach, dash P for ports, 80, and then trad app single. And then we're going to tell it to do open up localhost. So let me make sure I get this right, because this thing is not very stable. This is my little timer app. So what I'm doing here is counting how long it took for Docker run to respond. Damn it. OK, that's going to totally fail, because I forgot to put port 80 in it. Let's do that one more time. But localhost 8080.
So you're spinning up doing a Docker run, and then you're timing how long it takes to get back a successful request from the local, from the URL, right?
Yep, and that's lying, because it's already running.
Oh.
So let me get rid of those containers that I left behind. And we'll run that again. And so now what you're seeing is it took 542 milliseconds to start the container, and this is doing requests of the server until the page responds.
So what you're actually waiting for here is how long for it to compile the application?
For ASP.NET to spin up. So it took 13.4 seconds to start. Now, it didn't seem like long when I did the command here, went over to the browser, typed it in, and waited for it to come up. But this is why we want to explicitly measure it.
Okay. So the other one's presumably faster? Is that your point? Yeah? I hope so.
Hold on. It's not that fast.
That would have been amazing.
Poof.
Okay. Cool. All right. So to be fair to your other container, you could have done a build.
I could.
And then not done a compile every single time you tried to start the container, right?
Huh?
Go back to your Docker file. If you just do .NET, if you do .NET
yes,
build,
I could have .NET build, and I could have .NET published.
And then your start time would probably be about the same, right?
It would. My start time would be the same, but I still have a larger container because it needs all those dependencies.
Okay. So where's all that size come from? So if you do Docker history on trad app single, this is a cool command for those of you who haven't seen it. I don't know how many of you have seen this command. None of you? One or two of you? Okay. So what this command lets you do is look at all the different layers, and you can kind of see what commands added size to this history, to this image, all the way back to the beginning of time, which in this case is just the base OS image. So this is all these ones that are missing on the left here are kind of the layers from the bases. So this first line, 123 megabytes, that's Debian. It's like the very base image. It's the like Linux OS. Then these apt updates and apt installs, they are installing prerequisites that the CLR.NET needs to run. So there's like, you know, a couple hundred megabytes, I guess, of stuff there. I believe this is .NET, right?
Which?
So these two apps this 140, this 150 stuff, they're common Debian build tools, curl, SSL certificates, stuff like that. This 5.9 meg is the extra CLR dependencies that aren't already included in those first couple. This 114 megabytes is the .NET SDK. So that's the .NET, but it's not just what you need to run your application. It's also what you need to compile your application, do package restore, do all that sort of stuff. And then this top bit here is where you start actually adding your app. So you've got 3 megabytes worth of sorts code here, 3.7 megabytes, and you've got 37 megabytes worth of NuGet packages that you added to the image when you were building it because you needed to compile and you need the NuGet packages to compile. If you contrast that with your other image, with your one that was not running from the base, right, so this has got the same kind of low base parts with
the Debian base image,
but you've got a much smaller .NET because we left behind all the build dependencies. You don't have those extra NuGet packages because you don't need to compile in here anymore. It's just copying the compiled out, only the bits it needs from the compiled output and then running it. So for those of you who don't care about image size, that other one is probably fine. But there is more surface area. There's more stuff installed in the OS. There's more apt-get packages in it. There's more NuGet. There's NuGet packages sitting on disk that you don't necessarily need. Lots of stuff like that, right? So it's a little bit messier. There's a lot more stuff on disk, but it is fairly simple too, because your build and your run are all in one kind of thing,
right?
And that's just a trade-off for which of those two you prefer. But personally, I see a trend towards people prefer the smaller optimized one rather than the fatter single one. Typically, at least that's people who talk to me say I'd rather the small optimized one, even if it's a little bit more work.
And it's more than just the size, because what happens is when you're deploying containers, the whole idea is you have lots of nodes around your data center, wherever it might be, and you want to be in what's called network, what I call network close. Wherever your images are coming from a registry, you want to be able to get them to those nodes because the nodes themselves can be cattle and might be coming and going. So if the smaller the file, the faster the transfer is going to be. So that's an important part. All right, so that's all wonderful. Doesn't exactly like almost an hour and 10 minutes to explain all this. Probably not something you want to do on a daily basis every time. So one of the things that we have done is in our tooling is we've worked to make this a lot simpler. So we try to scaffold things by default for you. So I'm just going to delete these two here and kind of give a start from scratch scenario. Now, if you install our Docker tools for Visual Studio, what you can do is you will get this add Docker support. And now we have just scaffolded in, and we did the capital case D here for you.
Yeah, thanks. You mean you've done it correctly.
So we've got, now we've given you a Docker file that is pre-set up. We've done a little bit of tweaking for ordering to make sure that the images are optimized. It's like a total micro tweak. And we copy the content in, which is your optimized output. And we've set up Visual Studio for you already with copying the Docker file in, doing the build tasks. And one of the other things we've done is, if you'll notice here, in addition to IIS, we now have Docker. And now I can actually start debugging. And what we're going to do is spin up the container. We'll build the container using this Docker file. We'll actually use volume mounting, which we layer in here with a Docker Compose file. And we'll attach the debugger to the container running, to your app running in the container. And if we come over here, we'll give this a second. And there, our app is now running. All right, and notice the dynamic port. So that's another thing that we automate for you.
So you'd be able to go do Docker PS and see that dynamic port and stuff, right?
Yep. And if I go to the home controller, we can come over here, and as I click on about, I'm getting my breakpoints in the container.
Let me repeat this for a second. This is Linux, right?
This happens to be Linux.
On your Windows machine.
Yes.
So you pressed F5 in Visual Studio, and that told a Linux VM on your machine to run run some .NET code inside of it, and then you connected a debugger, and you hit a breakpoint, and it stopped execution of that thing running through like three different OS abstractions, and then hit a breakpoint, and you can like inspect variables and stuff.
Yeah, you can. Isn't that kind of cool?
You're a well-trained audience. I love it. My next statement was going to be,
okay, so now we have it running in the container, but how many of you get code right the first time?
I do.
There you go, okay. Okay, so you guys don't need this feature. So you probably come to expect that you can go to your Razor files and change something. Well, okay, this is our change for Wednesday. I guess this is our change for Friday.
Yeah, it is Friday.
I didn't notice. Did we actually? Yeah, it says Wednesday here. Okay.
Nice.
So I'll save this, and now I was able to refresh that even in the container. So
yeah,
that's pretty cool.
So now you can actually develop and debug inside the same environment that your application is going to be running on on the server. So now you're never going to have the situation where it runs on your machine and doesn't run on the server, or the situation where it builds on your machine and doesn't build on the server.
Right.
That is pretty sensational.
That's pretty cool.
All right. We have like 2 minutes left, and you have all successfully held your questions. So if you do want any, there are some microphones, and since it's a huge room, you should try and get to one. Sorry about that. This guy's like as far away from a microphone as he could be. If you run up to the microphone, you can ask a question, or you could yell it if you think you can do it. Let's see. For which bit? For the Visual Studio tooling? Steve, where are your docs at?
So the Docker Tools extension is aka Docker Tools for VS. So we have information there. There's a video there that walks through that. And we have Docker Tools for VS Code. And then there's a couple links there, including my presentations. On my blog, I just published a walkthrough of this yesterday, actually. So you'll see pretty much most of that demo that we covered in that blog post. But then, of course, you can get our Docker Tools for VS Code, and we'll set things up for you in the first place. This one or this one? What, that one? Okay. So in that one, it says presentations, the GitHub account. Go to presentations, look for Ignite. And the deck will be there, as well as the demo script that we run. I'm not sure which way I typed D on that one, but we'll see. But there's the demo script of everything we did. So thank you. Please fill out evals and before you run to the airport. We do appreciate it, and we'll stick around for a couple more minutes for any other questions, because we're officially out. So thank you.